You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Hammer and Rails podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Casey Bartley.
And we are here to talk about Purdue's two most recent basketball games, one against IU, of course, where they lost. Yeah. And then today's victory over Northwestern.
Yay!
bit of a bounce back game, knocked Northwestern out by 20. So no game to look ahead to because we will be recording middle of the week to look ahead to the next game on the schedule,
Iowa.
Which is going to be at Iowa. So we'll look ahead to that one in the next podcast. So today we're just going to be talking about these two games against IU and Northwestern, maybe talk about some trends we see, what we think of the team going forward. And before we start looking at those two games, there is kind of a broad question I wanted to ask Casey. So are you ready for this?
I know everything about ladies. Let's go.
Not that type of broad, but I appreciate you throwing in some wordplay. It's always nice. So you have been more of the optimist during basketball season of
life.
The two of us. Yeah, well, yes, I don't know about that. regarding this basketball team and what they're capable of. You were the same way last season.
Mm-hmm.
I know we didn't have the podcast together
mm-hmm.
last year.
So it didn't happen.
But we were still in a group chat together. I was not sold on the team last year. But
I worked
you
hard.
You did. You guaranteed me. You said, you know, this is a team that's going to get to the Sweet 16. And then after that, you know, who knows what happens. And eventually I came around and I believed you. And of course, we all know what happened. Purdue lost in the first round. So I bought into your hype and you let me down. Given how this team has played recently, with the recent struggles against IU, against other teams that have kind of a dominant guard, have you revised your expectations for this team or are they still the same?
No, because I'm going to go back even further in time, Ledman.
Ooh, okay.
To a place where we were all reeling from a dramatic, incredible, heartbreaking, crushing loss in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I'm aware of when that was. Thank you for bringing that up. After my team just lost in the playoffs.
I was going to ask you how you were, but
I'm fine.
That was rough.
That
was rough.
Like, it was.
There was no reason for them to get close again.
No. And for those that don't know, I am a Bucks fan, and no, it has nothing to do with Tom Brady. It has to do with Mike Allstott going to the Bucks. So deal with it. I've been a fan since the Sean King days, so I don't want to hear you call me a front runner. But anyway, go ahead, Casey. Take me back to that Elite Eight loss.
And I'm driving up north from Louisville, and we're all in this group chat, sad, sorrowful. And I called 2022. This was the season. With all this talent lining up that we're going to have, this was the season to break through for the Final Four. So no, I still believe in this team. I still believe in the talent. We watched today a team without our best perimeter player. We just beat Northwestern by 20 points. We still beat Villanova in North Carolina earlier this year. This is a flawed team. Maybe a little more flawed than I thought. But we lost in a very hostile atmosphere on the road, in-state rivalry.
Yeah.
First time in, you know what, 5-6 years?
Yeah.
And we lost by 3, and we went 7-17 from the free throw line. And
oh my gosh, just awful.
They had one guy who was barely playing this season go 8 of 13 for the field for 20 points. Things are going to happen. Should Purdue have won? Yes. Is it concerning that Trey Williams apparently doesn't know how to play basketball anymore? Yes, that concerns me. It scares me a little. I thought he was Mr. Big Dependable on our team, and the way he's played lately, that's not true. But the fact is, we have talent on this team. You could argue we have quite a bit of talent underplaying what they are, and we are still a team kind of figuring it out. We saw some things today that gave me some more optimism going forward. We teams lose. It's what every college team in the country does. They disappoint you over and over again.
Yes.
March is when this is defined by. Are we still good enough and capable? We talked about it last week. We are a team of runs. We are one of the best teams at making runs. There is no singular skill to a team that is more important to winning games, particularly in March, than that ability to, in 5 minutes, absolutely flip a game or run away from.
That gets to something you often point out in the group chat, and I'm sure you've mentioned it on Twitter, but you always say, and others back you up, that this team might not win the Big Ten, but they are a team that is built for March, and you think they will be better in March. And I want you to kind of explain why you think that is.
One thing is, all of these schools we play in the Big Ten, we play twice a year. These teams have played against the Matt Painter program in the offense for years. They are more familiar with our stuff than any of the teams we're going to play in the tournament. That matters. When you are a team as disciplined as Purdue is at running stuff, you watch some of these other teams in other conferences and their offense just disappears for 10-minute stretches and they don't run anything. And that's not what Painter or Purdue does. It is good that we are disciplined, and when we play teams that don't know us, it's a lot harder for them to defend that. Second of all, we have Jaden Ivey on our team. The combination of him and Sasha is potentially not going to look that much different than what we saw when Carson and Klein were working. Two guards that demand attention on the outside, inside, everywhere, running off screens, moving around. That's very difficult to defend. If either one of them get hot in a game, lights out. We don't lose when Sasha makes shots. Jaden Ivey, if he's hitting jumpers, I don't think we're losing any games. So, and then combine that with the Edie and Trey factor. Trey's been bad. But we have enough of, we've seen him be really good. So, and you know, Edie has been downright dominant. So we have pieces. I still trust Painter. There's still some things that, you know, bother me in game, whatever. I trust this team still has the capability of really turning it on. And I think we have 3 to 4 legitimate guys that can take over a tournament game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all makes sense. It's just, and I think a really important thing that you pointed out is, every college basketball team is going to lose. I mean, no team other than IU in like 1976 has gone undefeated. You know, it's a whole different animal than college football, where if you want to be the top team, you have to run the table or else have a loss to a really good team and have only one. I mean, you're not going to see really a 2-loss team in the national title game unless they expand the playoff to 8 teams or 16 or so forth. But for college basketball, every team is going to lose. They're going to have head-scratching losses. They're going to have losses to teams in conference that maybe you don't think you should they should lose to, but ultimately they're going to lose games, and you just have to figure out how they lost the game and what you can improve upon from those losses. And I hope that Purdue can do those things going forward. So, that's pretty much it. I'm glad to hear your perspective on what you think this team can do. Go ahead.
Let me ask you, would you feel better if, say, we're 15-3 right now?
Right.
If we were 15-3 right now, say we had this IU loss, and say we lost the Villanova game and lost the Wisconsin game, would you feel better? Do you feel worse or better that we lost to bad teams but beat some of the better teams we played? particularly non-conference.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably rather have no loss to a bad team, you know, and I don't know that we have a loss to a bad team at this point. But it's just, I mean, maybe Rutgers, but I don't think we know enough about who Rutgers is going to be at the end of the year. But it's just, college basketball is wild. I mean, it's been that way for a few years. There are a lot of good teams at the top, but they can still be knocked off any given day.
I am encouraged that we won those early non-conference games. In each of them, we kind of came back from behind, kind of had a second half run.
Yeah.
And I'm encouraged that we came back against NC State, that we dominated right. Florida State. That makes me feel more hopeful than it does make me feel bad that we lost at IU or even at Rutgers.
Yeah, yeah.
As much fair as enough. That game hurts.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, those are important games. Non-conference is important. Like you said, those are the teams that will play in the tournament. All right, so with that question and answer out of the way, I think we're going to look back at IU and Northwestern. IU, obviously, 68-65 loss. This is the first loss in 10 games to the hated Hoosiers. So, you know, I'm of two minds of it. I mean, like you said in your initial answer there, it's a really tough environment to play in, and you knew IU was going to bring their A game. So you have to assume Purdue was going to be challenged. But on the other hand, I just hate losing to these freaking jackasses in Bloomington every time. I mean, it doesn't matter if Purdue is bad and IU is good. It doesn't matter if I expect a loss. I still hate coming out of Bloomington with a loss. It just hurts. It sucks. And then you get the chirping of all the fans from IU, and it drives me nuts. So, the free throws to me were the biggest problem for this team. I mean, 7 of 17 with a number of those being front end of 1-and-1s. And they could not convert at the free throw line. You know, they clawed their way back and just couldn't finish. It was kind of a really tough game to watch.
Yeah, full disclosure, I didn't see the second half, minus the last 2.5 minutes. Did watch the first half, which was probably the worst half of basketball we've played this season, I would say.
It was pretty bad, yeah.
And, yeah, free throws, you can't go 7-17 from the line.
Especially on the road.
And have Trey Williams just completely no-show. And have Sasha Stefanovic not make threes. And expect to go on the road and win at Assembly Hall. It's just, that is not a record. That is not a recipe for success in any capacity. So
No. And, I mean, it was kind of incredible because the depth of Purdue has been such an asset for them throughout the entire year. I mean, we saw it especially in that Villanova game where the team really, like, as the game went on, Purdue seemed to stay fresh, but Villanova was getting tired legs. Well, in this game, the bench for Purdue only was able to produce 4 points, 2 from Caleb First and 2 from Trevion Williams. And, I mean, it's that sort of thing that's going to pull this Purdue team under if they're getting no production. Brandon Newman, no points in 5 minutes. Ethan Morton, no points in 7. Eric Hunter Jr., no points in 16 minutes. But I just don't know what was going on. I mean, we found out, of course, later that Jaden Ivey had a hip issue prior to the IU game and was in a little bit of pain. So we don't know how much that impacted him. But in the second half, he got really mad and kind of took over the game for a stretch there. But we've got to have more than Ivey. And you touched on Trevion Williams just sort of vanishing in this game. And I don't really understand what happened and how he has now done that against both Illinois and IU. It's a very troubling trend. Do you have any idea? Does he look off? Is there an injury that we don't know about? I mean, what do you see in his game that's causing him to play so differently?
I can't recall a game where Trey he took only 4 shots and
including,
had 4 turnovers.
Yeah, including a shot at the end of the game that basically would have put Purdue ahead enough that the game would have been over, and he just airballed it. I mean, his little hook from probably 3-4 feet and just completely airballed it. I mean, it would have won the game, and that's usually where we love Trey. You know, he's Mr. Clutch. You can really trust him with the ball at the end, and he biffed it.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it. Like, the only logical thing that would make sense is something is wrong with him. Because this is not the player that we've seen. He's a senior. He doesn't disappear. He doesn't miss
right.
bunnies. We've seen him struggle. Like, the Coburn thing kind of made sense. That's the kind of big man you struggle against. Only he didn't really go up against Coburn. He went up against backups. And then, all of a sudden he's missing all these shots left over the left shoulder, over the right shoulder, little floaters, things that he makes. And then add on to the way he played against Northwestern today, where he is putting these passes in places that don't make any sense, rocketing 90-mile-per-hour fastballs at the ankles. Something, whether it's in his head, confidence-wise, or something in his body is not allowing him to do what he's used to do. There is definitely something in these last three games that just don't make sense. He's not playing the way we expect. And yeah, we tested the theory. We have three stars. What happens when only one of them shows up? We were still in the game late. And if we make a few free throws or make that one little bunny late, we probably win the game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So it's, you know, you can tell yourself that for as bad as Purdue played, this game should have been a lot worse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there was a stretch there where Purdue looked like the game was just getting away from them. And then, as I said, Ivy sort of, he got angry after there was a foul called as he was going up for a layup. And then the IU player, I cannot remember which guy it was, might have been Race Thompson or something, kind of grabbed him still as he was going up by the arm and pulled him down. And he landed a little hard, and it was just one of those things where it was like it was an unnecessary little bit of gamesmanship by IU. And Ivy, of course, he was obviously it hurt him a little bit, but I mean he popped back up, and you could tell he was hot. He ended up hitting both free throws, if I'm remembering correctly, and then he sort of turned it on and helped drag Purdue back in this ball game. But at the end of regulation, of course, he also had an opportunity to make a shot to put the game away, and he missed it as well. And just everybody was just a little bit off, and it was just enough to keep this game out of reach. And you hate to see it against a team like IU, because as much as we hate to admit it, I mean, there's a lot of talent on that IU team, and a game like this is something that could maybe kickstart them and push them higher, you know, higher mentality-wise or confidence-wise, so that they can maybe turn this thing around and make their way back to the NCAA tournament, which seems likely. And for me personally, I want to see IU fail all the time, so that's tough.
They did just get squashed by Michigan today.
They did, yeah. And Michigan, and it was at IU. So, and this is a Michigan team that hasn't looked particularly good all year. So, you know, who knows? And of course, Rob Fennessy had another just normal game against Michigan. Whereas against Purdue, you know, he goes 8 of 13 for 20 points, including the absolute dagger of a three as time was running out. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to me, one of the questions that I have about this game is, Painter had seen how Trevion Williams was playing, yet he continued to stick to his rotation of Edie Williams. I understand Edie, you know, probably was a little tired. He got 25 minutes, Williams got 15. But at a certain point, you have to be like, hey, Edie, I need you right now. Go in there, you know, suck it up for me. Maybe do a little switching at timeouts, you know, offense, defense, use some free throw time to switch some folks out. But to me, I would have been much more comfortable for just this game with Zach Edey in on that last possession where Williams got the bunny and missed it.
Yeah, you just have to wonder how much Edey's free throw shooting was the reason for that.
Yeah, that's
2 of 7 from the free throw line. If you're going to shoot like that late in a game, your job out there is to run the offense through him. He was 5 of 6 from the field, but 2 of 7 struggling on the road to hit free throws.
It's fair to point out. It's fair to point out that Trevion was 0 of 2 from the free throw line.
Yes. The one argument is Trey is the closer. He generally closes these games. His ball movement is usually very, you know, pivotal to playing late. But, yeah, Edie's been good enough to close out some of these games. And free throws is the one thing that makes sense to where, like, he's just not making them. So I need something else. But, yeah, it's frustrating because we still should have wrapped that game up despite how bad we played.
Yeah.
You're air ball of a push little floater from Trey from going up three late. And
yeah.
And Rob Fennessy on the other end is acting like Steph Curry out there after playing 15% of his team's minutes going into that game.
Right. And I think it's worthwhile to point out, you know, some other folks on Purdue who did play well. Mason Gillis, yet again, 29 minutes, 5 of 6 from the floor, including 3 of 4 from three, wound up with 7 rebounds, 2 assists, did turn the ball over twice, but with those kind of numbers, that's not too bad. So he had 13. Edie had 12 and Ivy had 21. They were the only Boilermakers in double figures. So you would like a little more help on the offensive end from some other folks. But, you know, Gillis has really cemented himself as a player that this Purdue team can count on. And I want to point out on Twitter that you admitted to being wrong about Mason Gillis. And I'd just like to hear your explanation for what kind of finally convinced you that I was right and you were wrong.
I changed my mind. I said this on Twitter also to a buddy. It's weird in Mason Gillis because I feel like the one thing you think he's good at, which is defense, rebound, you know, being that physical tough guy, I don't think he's as good at that as we think he is or he should be. Like, he's still a subpar rebounder, and he still gets lost on defense a lot. But he's so much better at everything else than I thought he was and I thought he could be after last season. He's shooting lights out. He's making plays, moving the ball around. That's really good screen. So he's getting in the right places. He's finishing better at the hoop. So I just think the improvement he's made mostly on the offensive end has far exceeded any of his limitations elsewhere. And he keeps stepping up and playing really well in these games. So you kind of have to just tip your hat to him. He played well again. He looks like he belongs. He doesn't look like he's scared for any moment. And yeah, he's been good. You forget that. You know, he's not some plucky, small recruit. Like, he was a four-star.
Yeah.
Four-star coming out. He's just 3 inches too short.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the IU game. I really am now looking forward to when they come to Purdue. I believe that's in March, March 5th, last game of the regular season.
3 days before my birthday, baby.
There you go. I'm really hoping Purdue can put a little bit of a whooping on him to just kind of put their fans kind of back in their place, because honestly, I can't handle the IU fans in our mentions. It's like you've won one of the last 10. I know it's great you won this one, and kudos to you. Celebrate it. But I really want to make sure to knock them down a peg and put them back where they belong. So I'm really looking forward to that game a little more now, which I guess maybe it's good for the rivalry. But again, I would still rather IU lose every single game. Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying what a lot of people tell me. But I would rather IU lose every single game. I'm still going to care about the Purdue-IU game, even if IU is 0-17 going into the game. It doesn't matter to me.
It's fair. I generally don't think of them if we're not playing them, but it is very fun when we beat them.
Yes, absolutely. And like you said, they lost to Michigan today at home, so their hopes and dreams of having an undefeated season at home have gone out the window. So anything else about this IU game that you want to comment on before we head to the break and then talk about Northwestern?
No, I mean, just a general theme is our defense doesn't make teams uncomfortable, and that's probably the biggest problem we have.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there is one thing I wanted to mention. Now that I'm remembering. So you said you watched the first half and saw most the end of the second. Do you have any idea what happened with Jaden Ivey and Trey Galloway to cause Ivey to just kind of push him on his ass about 90 feet away from the action in the game?
No, except that he had pushed him a couple times before that. He was very annoyed about getting grabbed off ball.
Are you saying Galloway pushed him or Ivy pushed him?
Ivy was getting handsy and like pushing him off of him a couple possessions before that. So he was getting annoyed that he was getting grabbed off ball.
Okay.
I'm sure there was some talking involved as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought maybe he just said something to him, but it was one of those things that happened so far off the ball that you have no idea what happened because there's no really great camera angle for what was going on just before. And of course, Ivy didn't really have a great first half, and he sat on the bench for quite a little while after that altercation there. So hopefully Painter sent him a little message that says, you know, I know it's frustrating. You're going to be keyed on by a lot of these players, a lot of these teams, but we need you out there, and we need you to keep your cool. So hopefully he learned a little something from this. You know, like I said, he played great in that second half. So, you know, we'll take it. Love the passion. Hopefully he can keep that in check, though, as far as giving the other team some free throws. But that is it for this IU game. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about Northwestern. So we will be right back with you, folks.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And we are back. So as promised before the break, we're going to take a look at Purdue's 20-point victory over Northwestern. The Boilermakers returned to Mackey Arena and were victorious 80-60. Really pulled away in the second half. Also, very consistent on offense, 40 in the first half, 40 in the second. So that's just fun for people who like numbers. You know, Purdue looked a lot better on offense. They were without Jaden Ivey due to his hip issue. Painter said after the game, he's not sure when he's going to be back. He said they're hoping for Thursday, but if he can't go, they're not going to push him. And I think that makes sense. I mean, they understand that at this point they're playing for the tournament and they need Ivey to be healthy come tournament time. So, I will take that, but of course we'd love to have him back against Iowa. So, Casey, I know you were able to watch the entirety of this game. What stood out or who stood out to you from Purdue?
Ledman, it's our favorite game. Who had the highest plus minus on the Purdue Boilermakers?
I'm going to say Ethan Morton.
Gosh darn righty it was.
Yeah, I knew at halftime. I think it was like plus 16 at halftime, but I don't know where it ended.
Plus 23? He played I imagine is a career high 28 minutes.
Yeah, I would think so. Without looking that up, that's got to be his top.
And he did it, you know, normal fashion. 2 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. It
yeah.
Doesn't scream off the box score. Did get one powerhouse two-hand dunk, though.
Right? Did not expect that. I mean, I assumed he could dunk. I don't remember much seeing that much in his highlights from high school. Maybe it was there and I just don't recall, but that's got to be his first dunk in a Purdue uniform, right?
It was.
Okay.
you know, long. He's taller than you think. Pretty decent athlete. But yeah, I mean, this was the Sasha game, though, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, especially the bounce back from going, what was it, one of seven from three against IU, and then now he's 6 of 10, and he just looked great out there.
He earned all 6 of those threes, too.
Yeah.
Those were the. I hope this becomes a staple. Like, you watched Hunter pretty much look for it every time he was in semi transition. Oh, Sasha's trailing at the top of the key. I'm going to dump it off and pull it from, you know, 28 feet. And it worked out most of the time. Sasha's a pretty good shooter, especially in rhythm when he can see it. It is good that without Jaden Ivey, we were able to still dominate this game in most fashion.
Yeah, and put up 80 points. You know, regardless of who's out there on the team, we want to keep scoring points. That's how Purdue has won so many games this year. I mean, we started out scoring, 90 plus in the first few games. And of course, Big Ten season, you expect that to go down a little bit just because of the level of competition. But to score 80 pace. Points without, yeah, well, pace as well. But to be able to score 80 points without one of your top players and obviously the top guard out there is huge for this team and what they can do as a team without Ivy.
Yeah, probably just going to mention this, right? Let's just go there now. The big oof, the big poo-poo platter on the game, the big, oh my goodness, what happened? Brandon Newman got a chance to start.
Yeah.
He had a chance to play a lot of minutes if he played well.
Yep.
He went 0 of 5.
Yeah.
Doinked.
He was
doinked some looks, just wide open.
Very
looks.
Bad. Yeah. And he was the only player of the 9 players that played, he was the only one not to score.
And the only one with a negative plus minus. In a 20-point win, he had a minus 2.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
Yeah. If he was on the floor, Purdue was not having a good stretch, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
It's a problem. His athleticism and size, we need that. Like, in tournament time, we need a guard like that. And
yeah,
I don't know what's happening. Ever since he got moved to the bench last season, it's just been downhill. Like, he's just not locked in the way that we saw at times previous.
Yeah, and you did have to think – hey, he's got an opportunity to start. Maybe this is like a confidence boost he needs. Maybe confidence is what he's lacking so far this year. And to see him have the opportunity to go out there, because, you know, I know starting is really like, it doesn't matter in the long run, but it matters to the players, you know, because that means you're the guy I went out there to start the game, to set the tone. And Newman was out there. He was ready to go. And then suddenly he goes 0 for 5, only winds up playing 12 minutes, the second least amount of minutes. Only Caleb First played fewer, and he played 11. And Caleb First had a great game, I thought.
Played really well in that first stretch.
Yeah, but Brandon Newman, I mean, he is a guy that we need to find himself, because, as you said, we need another guard like him. He's a different kind of guard physically than we have in someone like Sasha or someone like Ivy. He brings a different look than those two guys. And if we can get him to where he was playing last year, it would be huge. But he seemingly has been given every opportunity this year to put it together, and we just haven't seen it from him yet.
No. And yeah, he got good looks and he got them early and just doinked them all. Maybe it changes if one of them falls early, but it's just, his role is to come off the bench, and he needs to have these 3 to 4 minute spurts where he does good things. And right now he just can't find that rhythm. And it's a problem because he doesn't, in theory, we need him specifically on the defensive end and still to be a threat on the offensive end. And right now it's just not there. And it's getting to the point where you start asking the question, is Purdue going to be the place for him? We've seen it happen.
Yeah.
This exact thing with guards that don't click in this offense.
Yeah. And it's hard, you know, to have that conversation. We're not going to speculate about anything, but it's something that as a fan and as someone who writes about the team, you have to have in the back of your mind, because we have seen it numerous times,
a lot of times with
Painter and guards. I think honestly, it seems like guards are the main position that seems to transfer out under Painter. I don't know if that has something to do with the offense Purdue runs or the guards that Painter recruits, but it seems like that is the position that finds himself heading out the door the most under Matt Painter.
Yeah, and it's just like this too. They go into slumps. Their energy and defense isn't enough to keep them on the court. And next thing you know, their minutes just start to dwindle, and all of a sudden, poof, like they never happened. They're gone.
Yeah, yeah. So that's something to keep an eye on. I mean, we're really rooting for Brandon Newman, really hope he can turn around, because like you said, he's a guy that we could really use on this team, especially going into March. So a couple things that stood out to me, free throw shooting was much better, 10 of 13. And then Caleb First had a much better game, still not back to where we want him. Only played 11 minutes, but wound up 2 of 2 from the floor, hit both of his free throws, 3 rebounds, total of 7 points. So much better. I know you said he played good in his first stretch there. You think it changed a little bit in his second spurt?
He gave up 2 offensive rebounds in back-to-back
possessions.
Yeah,
exactly. That's
so,
what I was going to
like,
say.
You're not going to be happy about it, but he came in a ton of energy. Grabbed 2 offensive rebounds early, looking to put it back up, knocked down a 3 on the top of the key. Like, that is perfect. He's big, he's athletic, he moves well, and if he can shoot the ball at the same time, that is a dynamite 4 to bring off the bench. So more of that, less of the letting other people rebound, but it was a good bounce back game. He looked fresh and quick and agile again.
So speaking of how he looked, what do you think of the hair? Good or bad? Is
awful.
That an improvement?
It's awful.
I absolutely agree.
You can't be that similar toned with your hair and skin and then just almost shave it and almost have a fade, but not a fade. It's bad.
Yeah, the thing is,
it was a mistake.
As a guy who's had pretty short hair but never fully shaved his head, like, you got to know what your head looks like. You got to know what you're going to look like without hair before you go like that. So kudos to him for the bravery, but maybe he can be like Samson and the hair will grow and his strength in basketball will
return.
I tell
you what, we got some of the worst hair.
What?
Our white dudes at Purdue are just ruining this for a lot of people.
Well, I mean,
Sasha.
Morton's
Sasha, hair? Not
Sasha
great.
Sasha can't help it. Sasha can't help it.
Sasha can help it. Just shave that baby. Go JJ Redick. Like, just.
But then you worry if you're going to be in the Caleb First boat if he shaves his head.
It can't go much worse. Like, Just own up to it. He's going to look so much cooler. Edie's the only one that improved his hair this season.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair.
The mop look was strange. The short makes him look a little more menacing. Like I like that. Everyone else, they know they pretty much know what they're doing. They got it unlocked, but the white boys, just
yeah, we do have some problematic hair. I'll grant you, that's fair.
Like Trey Gillis is a sharp looking dude. Newman, they need to take the other guys under their wing and be like,
yeah. I like Ivy's hair. I think Ivy knows what he's doing.
Ivy's got good hair.
Yeah.
He grew up with women, so it makes sense.
Yeah, that's true.
He was just around women all the time.
Yeah, like, yeah. Always around all those Notre Dame women's basketball players, right. So I'm sure they helped him out a bit.
Yeah, so how about your boys? It's getting embarrassing. Like, first never should have been able to walk out of the locker room like that.
No.
Put a headband on. Headband would help a lot.
Yes, yeah. It's like the scene in Ted Lasso where they're like, everybody gets one haircut from the team captain because he's so good at cutting hair. We need a guy like that on the team because someone to like, you have to run a haircut by somebody to be like,
yeah. Mama Edie? Where's one of the Mama Williams is probably a great, like, probably great if he gets even half of his charisma from his mom, like, she needs to be around. Someone needs to guide these boys.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, you're in college. It's there's always going to be some awkward times. It's just unfortunate that they're
in college on a D1 program at a school that really cares about basketball. It probably doesn't matter. But why don't you go ahead and nail that down too? Okay.
Well, all right.
Take full advantage.
Fair enough. All right. So I mean, you know, Northwestern not necessarily a great program this season. Just 2 of 6 in conference. 9 of 8. Overall, so it wasn't a game that we expected to be very close, but it was interesting because we didn't have Ivy, just to see what the team would do. And I was very pleased with how they responded, how they moved the ball. And you pointed out at the beginning, but I want to reiterate how great Sasha played. He played 38 minutes. Not only great shooting, I mean, he has become very good on the defensive end, just with aggressiveness and getting in people's faces, being aggressive, disrupting players. And I think that's what we need from him. Obviously, he's not going to be our best defender out there, but I really love the energy he's been bringing on defense.
He's got good size. So especially as a help defender, which we saw him kind of leak down on a couple drives and make that rotation when Northwestern thought they had an open big, but he was able to get a hand in. That's the kind of stuff he has to do because he's one of the few guards that have the size to still be effective down there. And you're right, just being aggressive on that end, we need that. We need him and Ivy to really carry the way. I think that's the one thing we saw. We talked that we already leave teams feeling comfortable on offense. Without Ivy out there, I was a little concerned that we wouldn't have any forced turnovers at all.
Right. So, yeah. Go ahead.
It was good to see Sasha kind of have that little run, especially there in the second half where he was all over the place on both sides, really affecting things. And that makes a difference, especially in tournament time where we've seen him get played off the court frequently.
Right. And that's why it's so such a positive for me that he's being aggressive out there and causing problems for the opposing offense. So
yeah, but boy, does Northwestern not have problems. Like,
yeah,
they don't have people that cause problems.
Yeah, they're not a great squad. They have a lot of things to fix if they really hope to turn this thing around. And I'd be amazed if Collins is there for much longer if he keeps playing like this.
The one full game of Michigan State that I've seen in fast forward mode was that Northwestern game where they lost.
Right.
I have to watch other games because right now I just assume Michigan State is terrible.
Right. Yeah.
Because I mean, Northwestern just flat out beat Michigan State and it's just don't understand it.
Yeah. Sort of bizarre. So there's two more things I want to talk about. One, I think we need to give props to Eric Hunter Jr. 27 minutes, 4 of 5 from the floor, including 2 of 2 from three, which one was at the end of the game, which was, I don't want to say cheap, but I don't remember if the shot clock was winding down or if he just decided to shoot it, but wound up with 10 points, 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 rebounds, only 1 turnover. So this is the Eric Hunter I want. I know it was against Northwestern, who's not a killer out there, as we just said. But this is the kind of Eric Hunter Jr. I want on the floor.
Where the hell did that come from when he caught the ball left corner, drove, dashed, just aggressively cut through the defense, Eurostepped and finished with his offhand at the rim.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
where did that come from? Because a few possessions before, when the game was still a game and Northwestern went to his zone for a couple plays, he got the ball open four times and just stopped, which is exactly what you don't do in a zone, because once you get them tilted, you have to attack that space, and he just didn't, because his whole entire game is mostly hesitating and not knowing what to do. Where is the aggressive Hunter that just showed up randomly here? Make that a thing. That's what Purdue needs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if he plays like that, we might have had a little bit of a problem solved at the point guard position. So hopefully we'll see more of that. We'll keep an eye on it. So last thing is the bizarre stoppage of play during the game when a Northwestern player was down one end of the court and Edie had just grabbed a rebound, offensive rebound, all alone, obviously getting ready to just dunk the hell out of the ball, and the official stops the game because a Northwestern player was down in no danger
just
on the opposite side of the court. I cannot remember anything that bad ever happening. Can you recall a whistle that bad?
It's egregious. It is a co-rec whistle.
Right.
Something that you expect from someone who just picked up a whistle. I'm in an adult league right now. And there's this substitute ref they have every so often when the two main guys aren't there. He literally can't make the whistle whistle.
What?
It doesn't come out ever. Like, at best, it's like a half squeak.
Maybe he's allergic to the metals, like Roy Kent.
We can't understand. I've talked to the other ref. Like, we just watched the game. Like, I don't know what's happening, how this is a problem. That's the kind of person I would expect to make that call.
Yeah,
if you're worried about his safety, you stop the play as soon as he goes to the ground.
Right.
Not on the other side of the floor after a shot and a rebound where the ball's still in play. You already decided this play was okay to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, I could understand stopping it if Northwestern had gotten that rebound, because then they might try to push it, and you want to make sure the guy from Northwestern who's injured is safe. However, Purdue got the rebound under their own basket. Edie was all alone, clearly was about ready to dunk it. They stopped the play. Purdue ends up not even getting a bucket out of that possession once they get it going. And I mean, if Purdue would have lost this game by one or gone into overtime and then lost, I mean, it just would have been outrageous. The Big Ten has got to do something with these officials, whether that means professionalizing them and stopping with this part-time BS, or doing some sort of, like, making the referees available for post-game questions. They've got to do something, because Big Ten officiating is just so inconsistent, not only from game to game, but from half to half. And, you know, the NCAA, the Big Ten, every other conference might not want to admit this, but this is big business. This is not an extracurricular activity at the co-rec. You know, this is a billion-dollar business, and they're throwing out people who just make stupid mistakes that are really unexcusable, and they've got to clean it up.
At the same time, you watch an NFL game and you say the same thing.
Not as much.
It's pretty bad. The playoffs have been pretty bad so far.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's.
Here's what I would say. Remember back, what it was, like 10, 15 years ago? I don't remember when it was, when the refs went on strike and they had replacement refs. Remember how bad that was?
No, Ledman.
Yeah.
Forever
you
ago.
You remember that.
I was 12.
I don't think it was that long ago. Whatever year it was 2012, so it was 9 years ago. I mean, you remember how bad those refs were, and I just think there's got to be some additional training, or you got to professionalize this thing to take off, you know, these part-timers where they're high school teachers or principals, and then they work three nights a week in separate cities. Like, I mean, they've got to figure it out. So I just hope come NCAA tournament time, we can get some consistent officiating from game to game, from half to half, because when you have a guy like Zach Edey on the floor who's 7'4", officiating can mean a whole lot to how you progress as a team, and I don't want to have the officials deciding the outcome of Purdue's NCAA tournament.
Look, I'm right there with you. It's a problem. I can't imagine any institution where a complete lack of accountability for authority figures has ever gone poorly, but...
Well, before we get into that, I think that's good enough. So thank you for listening. We'll be back in the middle of the week. We're going to look at the upcoming game against Iowa. This, of course, will be the second matchup against the two. This one will be at Iowa. So
they'll have their best player back.
Yes, they will. Beat them last time. So for Casey and myself, thank you for listening. Make sure to rate, review, and hammer that subscribe button. We'll chat with you next week.
Boiler out.